Okay, my name is Rabbi Avram Kamen, and this is our Chassidus of K Learning Tuesday night. This shiur is dedicated always to the nishmas of Shlomo ben Moshe, our good friend Bundi, who some of you know and some of you don't know. We always begin the shiur with opportunities for people to give refuah shleimah, lila nishmas, if anyone wants to. Please take yourself off mute and let us know. This is the second installment of Kuntres of Tefillah. There will be at least
Sheldon Silver. Sheldon Silver. You know, Jerry.
Say it again, please.
Sheldon Silver. I don't know his Hebrew name. He's just Nifter. Jerry Silver is his brother.
Jerry Silver.
No, his brother, Sheldon Silver. You know, famous Sheldon Silver.
Sheldon Silver.
He died in prison. Unfortunately, he died in hospital.
Okay, and you're asking that his soul should have an aliyah. The schools are learning.
Also, Louis Nishmas Rachel Bashmuel.
He learns his Rachel Bashmuel. His soul should have an aliyah. And as we always say in Chabad, I don't know if it's the other custom, it covers them everywhere, we always end that with Neshama Zal Havan Aliyah, and we end by saying, Poil Yeshua Svakairuf HaOretz. Poil Yeshua, so that means, for those who are Peter Trele, that the elevation of the soul should affect the salvation down here in the earth.
And Rachel Bas Yirmiyahu Meir.
Rachel Bas Yirmiyahu Meir. This is a refuah shleima or Eli Nishmas?
Leila Nishmas.
Leila Nishmas. Okay, very good.
Simchatenu.
Louder.
Simchatenu. Bas Mordechai.
Simchatenu.
Bas Mordechai.
Bas Mordechai.
Bas Mordechai. Okay. That's a nefesh. It should be the father's name, right? Not the mother's.
Yes.
And also for Refuah Shleima, Tamar Yentl Bas Chana.
Refuah Shleima to
Tamar Yentl Bas Chana.
Tamar Yentl
Bas Chana.
Bas Chana. Refuah Shleima. Okay, since our topic is prayer, our prayer should be received, right? And all our wishes should go up and have illicit godliness coming down. All right, so I'm not taking for granted that everyone was here the last time. In fact, I know many people weren't. So let me just give a brief introduction to where we have come from. First of all, this is Kuntres Tefillah. This is a mimer of the Rebbe Rashab, written in the later 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, and it's addressed to the Hasidim. So the first part of the Maimer speaks directly to Hasidim who have been learning Hasidus for a long, 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 long time, all their life. And he tells us, and he tells them, that meditation in Hasidus is not what prayer is about. And we say, surprisingly, what? I mean, don't we have to bring some contemplative experience and thought to our meditation? Well, of course we do. So that's the kavanas that we bring to tefillah, but it's not tefillah. Prerequisite for tefillah, at least at this stage of the game, as he's talking to his Hasidim, or rather experienced Hasidim, prerequisite to tefillah is having some fairly good knowledge of Hasidus, so that when we look at the pesukim and the words in tefillah, we can bring some depth of understanding, havana to the experience. But that's not tefillah. That's what he calls hachana l'tefillah. And he also says another thing that's not davening. Many people, and I sometimes try this, I'm concentrating on a piece of wording in the davening, and I'm thinking initially about what have I learned about it. I used the example last time of Poseach Es Yodecha, that familiar pasuk in Ashrei, which is darshaned in Chassidus to mean not just open your hand, but open up your yud, Poseach Es Yodecha. Let the yud open up, the tzimtzum, let the tzimtzum be broken open, and all of godliness should be revealed. That's a nice hachana to tefillah, but it isn't tefillah, according to the Rabbi Rashab in the first two Isaiahs. Neither is it hachana tefillah to start making up the shetlach, which is important to do. In fact, the Rebbe told us very much that everybody has to be mechadish chedushim in learning. But davening is not about that either. So in short, we're going to start tonight with the beginning of the explanation of really what davening is. And I gave a little hint to it last time. When I mentioned to people who were here that one of the many different meanings of the word tefillah, and there are quite a few different meanings, is the word falal, which means to fall, like Lashon Nafal. And a person is meant to fall. A person is meant to fall on his or her figurative face and look inward to who we are and where we're holding and really examine ourselves, right? And there's another, the one that I did express last week is the Lashon of Tofil Kalei Cheres. The Tofil Kalei Cheres means that you take two broken pieces of clay and you bind them together. And that's kind of really where he's going to emphasize, because the emphasis tonight is on tefillah is taking the hisboinimus and binding it to the heart. And with this begins his explanation in Ois Dalet. This is an explanation of a quality of mind and a quality of heart, which is called das. This is a very spoken about often in Chassidus and a key lever in really moving oneself in an understanding of Chassidus that affects one's life. And let me say at the outset, well, that's an outset, right? Mm-hmm. You actually know that everything is made by his words. Okay, a couple of things. I'm going to start, and one of the ways that we proceed in this class for those who haven't been here, or even for those who have been here only recently where we haven't done this, is to ask folks at the table here. And now that we're on Zoom, and you guys have the ability to speak, and you have the text in front of you, we'll even invite anybody who's not at the physical table, but at the virtual table, if they want to read, no pressure. We're happy to ask. In fact, that was a heroa that Esther got from Rebbe when in writing to the Rebbe, that it would be a good idea in this class to ask people if they would like to read, to ask to bring them to the, bring forward the reading and spread it around.
Valid.
We're always valid. Okay. So I started to say that the concept here that we're going to explore, which is going to be the heart of tefillah, is the concept of das. Chokhmah bina das. Das, the middle cab between Chokhmah Bina up above and between the Midos down below. So I'll start. And those of you who, if you have questions, just hold it till there's a little stop when I, you know, and then come off mute and let's hear them. Amnam, however, Havoido Amiti, the true avoider, meaning what we have said before, that his bindiness is not the avoider. Avoider, davening is called avoider shebalev. It's called the work of the heart, the service of the heart. And his bindiness, as you can think and understand from the word, his bindiness, is connected with Bina, which is a part of the brain. Now, Das is also a part of the brain, but Das is that part of the brain which interfaces with directly with the heart. So the Avodah Amiti who be a Gias B'Tefillah, be a Gias Nefesh, be a Gias Basar. The work of davening is that one strives in one's prayers to work with the soul and to work with the flesh. The Hainu Yagias HaMoyach Be'in Godel, which is a work, an effort of the brain with great, great concentration, ubehiskashlis gedula, and with a tremendous connection. Hiskashlis is lashon kesher. Just aside, we'll explore this, and there are three words in that are always brought not necessarily together, but three words that Chassidus uses to describe das. This is one of them, hiskashlis. And it's learned from the very first appearance of the word das in the Torah, which is the intimate relationship between Adam and Chava. They were tied together. There are two others. The other one is hakora, which is recognition. Recognition is like, I see it. You come across a beautiful vista, and there it is, and it's exciting your heart. You see it in front of you. And the other is hargasha, to feel it in your heart, to sense, to have an idea that's sensed. Not an idea that's just thought, but an idea that's sensed. And he will explain this at length. So we begin with prayer being taking one's mindfulness and one's meditative capabilities and one's knowledge of Torah and mekashering it, hiskashris, with the heart, mit hashtarkeit, with a very big, strong, with a strength, zu getragenkeit, which is a Yiddish word for it, very big, very strong, the hamuskel, in the concept. So the concept doesn't remain something intellectual. The concept becomes something hartsidik. Now, one needs to understand, how does that exactly work? I mean, how are we built that this should happen? Well, think about the construct of the primordial man, the primordial human, right, left, and middle brain. So right, left, and middle brain, Chokhma on the right, Bina on the left, Das in the middle. So Das is that part of the brain, which I'm pointing to the back of my head, which connects down the spinal cord, and all the spinal cord connects with all the nerves and the nervous system, and ultimately with the heart and everything that, that moves the organism. So there's a physical counterpoint, a physical metaphor for this that exists in the way we're structured, that there's a part of this brain which receives from above, and then there's the lower part of this brain. This is the Moya Hadas, which brings everything down. So when a person, for a person to have a hatzedik, a stark diskashrus, a stark, stark, a strong connection with a concept, it takes a lot of time. He said like an hour or more. The harchiv es hahasoga, to broaden the understanding and his hisboininess in your mind, with as many details as you can, as many details shabod dafke as there are in the concept. And to bring to yourself this idea, in other words, we've talked about this in the last week, understand the concept in as detailed a way as possible, in, with as many details as possible, and many points of view as possible, and also include in them the things that are that you discover as you learn these concepts. But this is only like learning. It's only learning. But as we said last week, and as you said in the previous three oisius, it's a prerequisite. So you have to take this concept from the brain, using the faculty of das, which interfaces between brain and emotion, and create a hiskashrus atzmi, and create an essential connection, in the essence of the concept, hamuskel hamusig b'moichai. Now, what's going on here? We'll divide the head and the heart into two different realms, mayach, brain, and heart. But the heart is an expression in the Zohar. In the expression, the Zohar says that bina liba, bina is connected with the heart, ubo halev mevin. And the heart comes to understand. So there's twofold motion going. The heart can be lifted up to the brain. So the heart can be infused with braininess. And the brain can devolve and descend to the heart. And that's all because of the Moyech Hadas. And remember, prayer, tefillah is called the Voideh Shebalev.
Is Das the third element? Or is that the connection between
the two? Das is the third element as our brain power. And it's a good question. It's a third element, but its function is to connect the two. To connect the two above, Chokhma and Bina, to the two below, the two father and mother midos of Ava and Yira. So bringing the heart into your understanding, and it'd be nice, I'm going to pause here for a moment to see if we can put on the table examples in our own life. Bringing the heart to a lot understanding of the many details, Sheba Hamuskel in the concept, Gam Yesef Machi Yodi Kodim Belimudiba Inyan, even more than when you just learned the Inyan conceptually or intellectually. And I'm going to give an opportunity here for anybody to put on the table, if you can, because I think we need to, any example that you can bring in your life of the difference between simply knowing something and having a heartfelt experience of it.
I think there's something to be said about an experience that's had with somebody else. Meaning, the way that I would see it is sometimes like it's a bit of like a telepathic or like a deep intuition, right, of like, yeah, you know something, you know a person, or you know, and then like having this like deep connection that like you end up both being present at the same time.
Right. Okay. That's good. Anybody else out there want to take a stab at this? A heartfelt connection with something that's in your mind.
I have an example.
Sure.
One time I was upstate for a Shabbos and it was so dark, and the sky I never saw it before, but not only were there so many stars, but there was like it looked like the Milky Way was in the sky. And you know, everyone, you know that Hashem created the sky, but I felt like in that moment in my heart, like I knew Hashem created it, and I felt so connected to Abraham, who you know, who apparently was the first one to have that type of experience. Beautiful. Really like felt that in my heart.
So she knew that in her heart. Those are the two words. Knew it in her heart. Okay, so we can move on unless someone is really, really needs.
Another very quick example.
Go ahead, but speak loud. Is he mic'd over there?
Another good example, as mentioned just now, is looking at the heavens, as she mentioned, and knowing, seeing the skies above and the kochavim, the shemaim, and understanding that everything that we see around us is from the Creator, from the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's not just a question of us, it's a question of experiencing it.
Good.
And especially on Shabbos, when you have experience of the etzem neshama, and you move from the world around you into another dimension, another existence. When you seek to do malacha, you're becoming closer to Hashem's creation and looking behind, peering behind.
And you feel that. You're not just knowing it.
You're looking behind the veil and you know it.
Okay.
And that's that deep connection with
Kadosh. So that's good.
A deep knowing without logic.
It's a deep knowing without logic. That's exactly.
It's like when you feel something so deeply, but you don't understand why necessarily.
Right.
It's a combination of intuitive capacity both together.
Yeah. Okay, let's go further. I'm down to the bracket, the next bracket. So this is the hearts raised up to the to an awareness, and the awareness being drawn down into the heart. He's going now from above to below, where the brain is drawn down to the heart. Shenechkak, heart becomes engraved. And there's a feeling of the knowledge in your heart. This is what we call a heartfelt knowledge, that the heart hears and it feels the topic, the godly topic, which is understood in your brain. This ability to do this, to bridge and congeal the two realms, like in congealing two pieces of earthenware, putting them together, tibul kli cheres, is through the faculty of das shebamoich in the brain, hamispashit ubo gam lelev, as it comes into the heart, the nechlach lechokmah bechesed ugevura. Shehein Avugira. That's the bottom side of Das, right? The top side of Das integrates Chokhmah Ubina. The bottom side of Das integrates Hesed and Geburah, the Midos. Yehine keshehainyin elaki meir begilu b'maychay. So this is what, think about, this is what he's talking about. This is Davin. This is what Davin is meant to be. When, first of all, you have to have the conceptual background, and as he's going to say way later, you have to know the Purusha Milos. They explain, you know, what the words mean. You've got to have what to be thinking about, and what that you're thinking about is provoked by the words that you're looking at and reading and speaking softly to yourself, as he'll explain later. That's all the technique, but it's all of that technique is harnessed to bringing a gili b'moichay, the revelation that's in your heart, and harihum is spoil b'moichay, and the excitation of the brain. Al Elohim to godliness. The excitation comes out in either love of God or fear of God, awe of God. It has to do with the Oifin HaSug of His Boyness, with what manner and what context you're meditating. So this is the excitation of the Midos as they are informed by the brain. Which he calls an intellectual emotion, intellectual excitement. And then the heart itself is drawn after the brain. Because there's a power of being able to draw down from the brain into the heart. That power that's able to draw down brain into heart is what we call das. Shemoishech es halev, it draws the heart, it is spoiled that it should be excited, gam himis ve'eles hamoyech, as the brain is excited. Okay, I'm going to move now to the next bracket. And
Is there an analogy there, Rabbi, between the concept in Hasidus of Hashem alienating himself and bringing the chomius closer to the gashmius, closer to the godliness, as we say here, that the das comes down and lifts up the heart? Is there an analogy?
Not really. That's more the subject of the way I'm understanding you, what they call birurim, you know, exposing the godliness in the physical. Right. This is taking the contemplative aspect of your brain and drawing the contemplation down into the heart and raising the heart up into the contemplation.
So it's not like Hashem alienating himself.
It's not the, it's not about the covering
and bringing, and bringing the physical world closer to the Ruach.
No. That's another topic. That's the topic of Birurim, of bringing the physical world closer to the Ruach. Okay, I'm going to give an opportunity. Anybody either at the table, physical table or virtual table, feel like breathing a bit? I see somebody smiling out there. But
it is not. Up on the it is up on the screen. I have the text on the screen, so somebody wants to look at it.
So you're at the bracket on page, in the middle of page 15.
Somebody wants to read?
Anybody want to read?
Okay, I'll read. Where are we?
Esther's reading. The bracket in the middle, of the lower middle of the page.
Okanira?
Okanira.
Okay.
As we see in actuality.
What's the word there?
Shemiyah. That's immediately.
Immediately. Sheyispal ha-seichol shebemaya be'eze davar.
When the seichol of the brain becomes excited by some idea, by something.
Masha hukshar ma'ay be'maychay.
Something which is, the word here is kosher. In other words, right. Something that the mind really likes, and it's
right. Miyad yumshach gam halev pisnaim achar his bilus.
So then the heart becomes drawn immediately, right. Suddenly, immediately after this arousal.
His bilus zeis, right? That's a
his bilus zeis shibamaya in the brain.
Right. Bli yegia klal ela mimela umayla.
It's without any right. Without any work. That's like that. As you said, somebody said, I'm not sure if it was you or somebody said, when you just have this vision of something, it could be a person, right? A person that you love. It right. Could be a scene. You know, just remember the first time Sarah was talking about the skies. First time I was out west, the sky is so big out west compared to the east, you know?
Right.
And so whatever examples you want to give, but there's a contemplation of the grandeur of it, and that grandeur, that contemplation in the brain creates an excitation in the heart. And it's coming automatically. I'm not working at it, right? This is just a connection. There's the word hiskashris, right? It's a connection.
The vastness of the skies and the vastness
yeah,
of the
whatever oceans. Your example may be, yeah. You can each think of an example of it where you're not working at it. You're just in it. It's just there in front of your face. That's why I say he's focusing, the only word that he's used so far of the three words that I've mentioned is hiskashris, tied to it. Hiskashris is the result of recognition, seeing the one you love, seeing something that excites you. You reckon you, it somehow resonates, probably a good word. It resonates within you, right? Without you having to think about it, work at it, there's a resonant frequency right. That you establish
and
between
it sticks
it,
with you.
And it sticks with you. B'liyagia klal, without any real hard work. Ela mamela, automatically. So automatically your heart is drawn to that thing, to that person, to that experience, to that vision. From which the seichel is in the brain has been excited. And this is because this is das. Das, I mean, he's teaching us really what das is and how important. Das has a power that the other brain faculties don't have. The das has a faculty, a kayach hamushach, the mashicha. Mashicha comes from the word, you know, when you acquire something, a property, one of the ways you do it is mashicha. You draw it from one domain to another, acquiring.
They call it also from chazaka.
Well, chazaka is related, but something yeah. else. But when you take it from the pure domain of intellect and draw it into the domain of midos, when you draw it, that's the power of das. It has the koyach hamushach. That's the bechin. That's das. So it draws the heart to be excited about some intellectual excitement.
That symbolic transfer, that kinyan, is a way of symbolically transferring property, also in common law, not just in Jewish law.
I'll give you an example from the first time I was introduced to the quantum theory. Quantum theory, amongst the things that it puts on the table, is that the notion of a quantum leap, which means that things can move without any time in between they're peeing in one place and another. So when I heard that, it kind of blew my head. It was a totally new idea. And it somehow resonated me with, not somehow, when I then came and learned a little bit of Hasidus and was talking about the Ein Sof being able to, is spaceless, timeless, encompasses all space and time in one. And then suddenly, like, you know, it was like, I'll tell you a story. I mean, I'm just a very, I mean, just an example of myself. I mean, the first time I learned Tanya, first time I ever learned Tanya, I opened the book. I found it, I might have told you this, I found it in a farmhouse of a friend. And I opened it and it resonated with me to a certain level because it seemed to put together everything else, right? But then I came to Crown Heights and I went to a Tanya shiur. And I had this experience, this Rabbi Benjamin Cohen, who's from Australia, who speaks with a brilliant, beautiful English accent. Every word of the Tanya, I felt in my heart. And I think God gave me a huge gift. And to me, like when I think of Das, to me, that's, I was actually like moved back by hearing these words. For no reason, as you said, for no reason whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Totally, totally Lamaila Matan Badas.
The quantum concept is incredible.
Yeah.
And it's about the two. Also, if you look at the Bet HaMikdash, we shot it quickly in our days. If you look at not just time and space, but Hashem created the two. They said when Yaakov Avinu put his head down when he saw the images of the angels,
right?
They said it was the exact same place where the Bet HaMikdash was created, where David and Melech saw, yes, you know, the angels, same place. So there's certain places, not just in time and space, they say the place where Hashem created the world.
Right.
All right. So it defies both time and space perimeters. That's right. That's why when he said when he went into Hekel, there was no concept of time. Right? Because it's beyond the quantum concept is beyond time and space. So Hashem created it, he can be anywhere simultaneously. It's an incredible concept.
It's interesting.
I thought about that when I was in high school too.
I would guess most people here have probably been to.
That's why they said Lishtached. And when you said Lishtached, there was space for everyone to be able to go up in Lishtached. Yeah. There was no physical limitation to the space. I'm sorry. Right.
No, I just going to say, probably most people here have been to the Kotel. And, you know, I don't know anyone who's, including non-Jews that I know, who experience it as just a wall. They don't. There's something in it, something intangible.
The ability to
all right, let's go, though.
Time and space.
Jonathan, we're going to go further.
But even
okay?
When they used to daven, was it Yom Kippur, when they used to go on Lishtached, there was room for everybody to go up.
Let's go.
Physical limitation.
You're in the middle.
So, Rabbi, there was a question. Why are Tom and Das paired?
Okay. Why are what?
Why are Tom and Das paired?
Tom and Das?
Why are they paired?
Where are you talking about? Reason and Das? What do you mean Tom and Das? Taste and Das?
If I'm reading it right, that was a...
Someone's asking a question.
I hear the question, but I'm not getting it. Tam and Das.
Where's the pasuk? Where's the phrase?
Maybe someone wants to come on.
Well, I would imagine if it means taste, as soon as you taste something, even if your eyes are closed, you can recognize what the food is.
Right. I mean, I get that, but are you getting it from here, or just could someone who has Jonathan, please, whoever has the question, maybe speak the question. I see it.
The person with the question is saying she can't say it out loud because her kids are trying to sleep.
No, I see it. She wrote it. Lamaila Matan Badas.
Okay.
We say the expression, right? Something is higher than reason and understanding. That's when we take Das to mean simply knowledge. From that expression means it's higher than knowledge. Because Das, after all, does mean knowledge. But we're talking now the Pininius of Das. What Das really, what the Das Mishnah really is about.
Amnam Hispilus Hazais Shabalei. He Behelim. Adayin. Is that also continuing?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about the Hispilus of the heart. Excuse
the Brooklyn noise.
We're talking here where there's two phases here, or two directions. There's the heart being lifted to the brain and the brain being mushach down to the heart. When the heart is lifted to the brain, the heart is having a brainy experience, right? And that's where this hispilus that the heart experiences is rather concealed, relatively concealed versus the way the heart will feel when the heart when the brain draws into the heart, and it's particularly a heartfelt experience. So it's what the vocabulary in Chassidus is midah shebamoyach or moyach shebamidos. Midos as they are in brain, that's midah shebamoyach. I'm getting questions. I'll finish it. Midos as they are in intellect, or moya, brain as it is in the heart. So it's just the way you look at it. Whether this perspective is from below to above, when the midos are elevated up into the brain, I'm beginning to have some grasp of it. But I don't have the excitement that will be when the braininess actually pours out into my heart. So this is the midos. It's still in a state of concealment. Right. And it's not really as felt as it will be when the brain comes down to the heart. So therefore, it's compared to, and there's this language of the excitement of the brain. Hmm. Have you ever had an exciting brain excitement?
Like an epiphany.
Huh?
It's like an epiphany.
An epiphany. Okay, right. Just a concept, a wowing understanding. Just a wowing understanding.
So something opens up.
Mm-hmm, right.
Ach al yedei mashichas halev hanal she'ula milamayla lamata.
Yep. Through this that we just talked about, that the heart is being elevated up into the brain. After that, bo achakach, there comes. Then comes the brain down and pouring its energies into the heart, all through this middle faculty of Das, right? This middle faculty of Das. And this latter, is when there is engraved and felt the godly inyan in the heart. This is how davening is meant to be. Now, how to do it, we'll get to. And we'll also get, it's very interesting, the last parakin here, he describes people who can't do it at all because they just haven't learned enough. And a lot of us are in that pocket, right? All right, we're going to continue. I'll say the kitzer and then we'll see who else wants to continue. We've explained, yavar. Yavoida hamitis, the true avoida, right? Avoida shebalev, yavoida davening.
Where's this from?
This is the kitzer. Kitzer. The true avoider who yoga moicha bihiskashus gedoyla. It's to work with the brain and create a tremendous tying together. The oz tia hispilus alev. And then when the brain is tied to the heart, then the heart is automatically, bederek mamela, excited. Shehu inyan meshichas alev. And that's called a drawing down of brain into heart.
What does somebody do if they have, let's say, very hard time focusing? It takes a tremendous amount of work for them to focus on the words that they're saying. Like,
go to the doctor and if they have ADD.
Well,
how does somebody work on it in terms of Chassidus? You know,
how do you develop the ability to focus? Yeah.
How would somebody be able to do that?
I don't know if I can answer that. How do you develop? I mean, it's certainly a prerequisite for all of this, right? So how do you develop the ability to focus?
And be present, because in order to get to this level, you have to fully be present and immersed in
right.
What you're
saying.
Right,
he's even going to say at the lighter level, where you just focus on the Pirush HaMilos. You have to be, anybody want to offer? I'm not offering anything.
The Rebbe gave someone that answer. Someone asked him that, and he said, focus first on one bracha, and get used to always focusing on that one bracha. And then when you're used to focusing always on that one, let's say one answer, on that one bracha, you take on another one and another one. You go from there.
Good, beautiful. You're assuming the person can have that level of focus?
I don't know that with person, something that's that easy to just add on and then it would turn into an hour, you know? Like maybe at that, their avaida is just to focus on one bracha a day and that's it, you know? Like.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, obviously the Rebbe would know best, but that goes without saying.
I mean, look, first he said it, and secondly, it makes sense. Focus on what we can do, you know, tiny bites. Elisa, you wanted to offer something? No.
Yes. To go along with what was just said, there's also a concept that if you always are saying that the end is wedged in the beginning, So if at the beginning of her tefillos, one of the things that I was taught years ago, this is from Rabbi Chaim Goldzweig, Aleph Shalom from Chicago, that if when we say Adon Olam in at the end of, you know, from Berachas HaShachar, when we get to Adon Olam, if we really focus on the fact that that our neshama, we're entrusting, we've entrusted to Hashem that really it's not ours in the first place. Whether we go through, I personally didn't always go through all of Karbanos, but the one line from Karbanos, Ish Tamid Tukad, Ala Mezbeach Laisich Beh. If we go through that particular line, and if we can just focus on that one line, knowing that we are the Karban, and that the Nir Tamid is lit within us, that it should not extinguish, mm-hmm. then if we can have that focus, then that will carry through the rest of our tefillos as well.
Okay.
It was just something, yeah, that, and it helped me.
Right. No, I think whoever, you know, that whoever began this you're saying that the rabbi just said it, so it makes sense to everybody. You know, take bite-sized chunks of what you can focus on, and it will carry over to. Also, by the way, I mean, once you begin that, you can begin to train yourself to focus long. It's like, you know, strengthening a muscle. You start with low weights and work up to higher weights. So there's a discipline and a practice of learning how to focus. Anybody want to take on after the, in Oishe? We're going to start Oishe. Even though, as we said, das is the notion of creating a knot, tying yourself together, heart and mind, with the concept that you understand. And das is a mamutsa. It's an intermediary. Leheledes hamoy amidos, that gives birth to the midos. As I've said earlier, it joins Chochma Bina up above, and it's the intermediary, the interface to bringing Chochma and Bina down below. I like the word interface better than intermediary, even though it's often translated. I don't know how it translates in English. If someone has the English translation, you can tell me. But interface implies that there's two sides here. There's a side which it's receiving from above, and it's taking and doing something to what it receives, and then it's bringing it down below in a different form, but it's retaining the quality. In this case, the quality of intellect is strained through das in order to be fused with the quality of midos. So that's a mamutsa. So it's a mamutsa between the brain and the heart. So ein ze kol inyone. That's nice, but you should know that's not the only stuff that's going on with das. Jehuiskashus behamusko levad. It isn't just that it ties the heart to the concept. Yarihu moyach bifnei asmoy. Because after all, das is a function of the brain. It's a brain power. B'tlat moichin, right? The Zohar says that there are three brains. Chochma bina das, three brains. Shehu moyach gimel, and das is the third brain. Did you know we have three brains? And das is the third. Ela ikar mitzuyusoy, so its main inyan, in mahusa, and what it is. The word mahus, by the way, simply means mahu, what it is. Uhergesha inyan hamusa, is that it feels the idea or the concept. It feels the concept. But it's a feeling about a concept. It isn't just amida. It isn't amida. It's a feeling about a concept.
A little translation in Hebrew to English means essence.
Yeah, I just like this term because
it. No, I'm just saying to you, but that is interesting you mentioned that because it means the essence
of what's in it. It's basmuse, it's essence and what it really is. It's an inyan of musa, it brings of something understood, but it brings a hergish, a feeling to something understood. It brings the concept into some kind of feeling. And there's the word hakora. And it brings the idea from pure ideation to what we would call I see it, recognition, hakora. Behind you, Agide Hiskashris, through the Hiskashris, the tying together, Shemakashis Atzme Behazoka Leinian, through the fact that the faculty of Das ties itself to the topic, to the intellectual topic, and it's marker. There's another word, hakora, second word that I mentioned, three words for Das. we've focused on Hiskashrus, and there's Hakora, and also, excuse me, there's the notion of Hergasha, of feeling. So, the Das is the faculty that brings recognition. I see it to the concept. It's still about the concept. We're in a part now where he's emphasizing a Das is a brain faculty. It's not a Mita faculty. It's an interface, but it's part of the three brains. So it brings like the sense of I get it, but I get it like I really got it in my head. I get that because I can see it clearly. See it with my mind's eye. That through this market or margishes etzem ha'inyan, we're not talking about feelings. I recognize and I feel the essence of the inyan. In other words, I can say Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, but do I feel the oneness? The word itself, Shemaya, is part of the process because Shemaya is connected with Bina. I can get it in my mind, I can admit. Above reason, I admit that it's all coming from one. But do I have any like grip on it? Do I have any grip and tangibility, even in my brain, about the unity of God? So Das is the faculty that, even as it still is a brain power, that gives a sense of Hakora, recognition, and Hiskashrus with a concept. U'mishum zeh, therefore, nizvasis al yedei zuribe b'hasoga. Therefore, Das brings about a lot of understanding, because Das is that power of mind which is taking things into feeling, but I mean into feeling in the mind, understanding in the mind. Having a davar aburiya, to understand the thing clearly, yaisa v'ribi pratim, with a lot of details, u'ba'emik yaisa u'miskarav in, and with a great depth, u'miskarav in esle b'toy yaisa, and it brings the thing to you much closer, meaning in your mind. It's like, you know, the difference between a fuzzy under, I once remember myself learning trigonometry, and I still can't, I could tell you how to do trigonometry finally, but I can't tell you now. But I remember sitting through math courses, getting a sort of fuzzy understanding, which led to very low scores on the SAT because I just had a fuzzy understanding. Das has a capability to give you a very, what's his word, very clear, a very, I see it kind of understanding. The Gam Shumze, because of this, Nasa Mimenu Ispilus Hamidos. And because of this, eventually the excitation and the recognition and the clarity that you have about something in your brain will filter down and give the same a corresponding excitation in the Midos. See, we're really doing an anatomy here of Das, right? The Hargosha and this feeling, Zehu Inyana Das. The feeling of the clarity of a concept, before it even reaches your mind, the clarity of a concept is the mental faculty of Das, before the lower part of Das becomes an interface to the Midos. Because a person could understand something very well, but it doesn't have any feeling to it, it doesn't belong to him. He doesn't own it. It's very nice, thank you very much, but what's it got to do with me? Das says, these concepts, this whole structure, I mean, it could be anything. I mean, each of us will have our own example. I mean, if a person is a physicist, that person has a connection with the ideational aspects of physics. And someone else can learn the formulas, and it doesn't grab you. Das is the faculty that you can be grabbed by concepts. That's the upper level of Das.
That's the name I've resonated before also.
Resonant, right. Yeah. But but he's taking apart this is the top part of Das.
I heard that
the part of Das is which is a brain faculty.
So,
so he gives an example. Ukamai tinek hakil. You have a small child. Shemeven hakol, he understands everything. He can tell you the multiplication tables. He can divide 5,432 by 475 in his head. Right? He's got all that.
That's this one right here.
Okay. But now we're going to say something a little negative. So,
Brace yourself. That's not this one.
Maybe. Let's see what he says. He guts it. He can do it. He can do all the stuff. If you ask him, do you like math? What would you say? You like math? You like math. But not everybody, even though they can do this, likes math. It's just like the talent that they have. So you can have a kind of a kid who can do a lot of stuff, but doesn't, he's not connected with the essence of the idea. I happen to have a daughter-in-law who's a doctorate in mathematics, right? She lives it. She lives mathematics. I mean, she lives a lot of other things too. I mean, but I know people who took courses in it and delved into it very deeply, but that wasn't their life. They didn't become mathematicians. They became a lot of other things.
Rabbis are experts in Kabbalah and Tanya.
So therefore, since there's a type of existence where you could get all the stuff, you understand the stuff, but it doesn't grab you. Therefore, this is an interesting din, actually. A katan, pochus meben yud gimel, a kid who is less than 13 years old, this is the reason that he's not chayav in mitzvahs, as he's about to say. He can grasp all the things. He knows how to put on tefillin, right? He knows about kashrus. He's learned a lot, but he's not chayav in mitzvahs. Why? He's not about, because, and we call him, he's ene bar oinchin. He can't be punished yet for not doing mitzvahs. V'apel pishu hu charif, even though he's very sharp, u'bal hasoga, and he can understand a lot, but v'tefisa, and he grasps a lot, u'bake b'dini ha-mitzvahs, and he's an expert in all the mitzvahs. Mitzvahs ase, mitzvahs leisase, v'chitay very well. So he's getting up. We're going to distinguish this kind of person from one who has das. So he doesn't yet mikol mokem einu bar oinshin. See, he's not yet under the authority of being punished for anything he does that's not compliant. Im over if he transgresses al eza mitzvah. Why? Ibnei she'ein le das, because he hasn't yet developed the faculty of owning it, right? Bringing it ultimately to heart. Because he doesn't have, there's that word hakora. He doesn't have hakora, recognition. He doesn't see it, that this is clearly the way I need to be. Understands? To understand the whole Shas. We have people who made a Siman Shas at 12 or 13. Did you did that also? Also made a Siman Shas? No. Yes. Did you make a Siman Shas? Did you complete the whole Shas?
No, he just started learning.
It's time to learn. Right. All right, but there are child geniuses, right, who could do this, but they haven't yet matured in such a way that their heart and mind are together, that all of what they learn says to them, this is the way I'm designed to be, the way it says in the Torah. And as a result of them, they don't have any hakora yet. They don't have any recognition, vihargosha, and any real feeling of dayan, the etzem in mitzvahs, and what mitzvahs are. What do Hasidus tell us? Elementary Hasidus. Mitzvah is Lashon, Tzavto v'chibur, connection. That's in Aramaic. Tzavto v'chibur. Tzavto is Aramaic, and chibur is connection. That's what a mitzvah is. So I can understand the mitzvah. We have theologians, right? We have people in theological seminaries who know the entire Talmud, but it may not necessarily have anything to do with what they do with their life. Because there's no hakorah. It's not no resonance, and there's no hagasha of what it really, what the etzem inyan is of mitzvahs. The gemeshi amrila inyan the dorim, we say by in about the dorim and hekdesh for a person to when a person says I'm taking a neder in this, or he says I'm making this animal kaddish, he has to do that in order to be michuyev, obligated in that. He has to know for whose sake he is making the nether, which is God's sake, and for whose sake he's making it hektish.
Otherwise, it's not a knowledgeable nether. Yeah. So he can't be held responsible for it. Where does that come from? Das or hakara?
This comes from das. And we got three aspects of das: hakara, argosha, and hiskasha.
So you can't be bound by your words.
Is there a presumption
that you have the requisite intent? And that's a rebuttable presumption.
How does anyone judge this? Whether he had the right intent or not. But the point is, in order for him, for this hektish to be hektish, in order for this netter to be a netter, there has to be hakora, recognition, behargasha, that I'm binding myself to the one who has commanded me about Nidora and Kedusha and Kutcha. Well, and as we see on physical, and this now we'll go back to an example in the physical world, the moment. All right, here's an example. A kid, 7 years old. Let's go. Kid, 7 years old.
I'm thinking marriage. Right. That would present
problems. Let's look at what he said. Keep your eyes on the book. Okay. What does he say? He's talking, this is a very, to me, very powerful because it's so simple. Take affairs of money, right? Financial affairs. V'gedula, or greatness. What makes somebody great? Even though he understands clearly, he understands this is a $100 bill, this is a $1,000 bill. If I take 10 $100 bills, I get $1,000. The kol makim, amitas ha'inyan shel mamon, but the true inyan of money, what it is, and gedula, what power and greatness are for, is rachak mimenu, is still far from him. He can understand that there's a great king, King David, right? But what is kingship all about? What responsibilities and what faculties and what's the result of kingship? He can understand that $100 is a decent amount of money. But what is money for? What did God intend money to be for? So it takes a certain amount of maturity. That would be the word on the table. Maturity to understand the union of money and greatness. And a little kid is far from that. He doesn't really get that like an adult does. Became the he says in the opposite, where it comes to, you see someone who's a low person. A person doesn't have a room to live in. A person is poor. And you know that the person is poor. And the person is low. Even though the kid understands that this guy doesn't have a room to live in. In a behergeshetzle, he doesn't really have a feeling yet, which we might call empathy. Empathy takes a certain kind of maturity. He doesn't have the feeling yet. Kemegba godol, like an adult does, like some adults do. Shemagid heitev chesven ha-shiflis adults, who have a feeling, and a powerful feeling, for what this person is lacking, etc.
But there are some children who are very much empaths, who can really,
yes,
you know.
There are kids who are empathic. And there are kids who, you know, who have understanding of this other, who can tell you what money's about. Who can tell you what kingship's about.
There's one, you said it's beautiful, but there's one problem when it comes not just to the Dorian. Marriage, right? It's a headdress. If a woman is Moab for a husband.
But you have Mekodeshously.
Yeah, I don't want to say it, want to say it.
What are you saying? That you have to have certain...
No, let me finish the question.
Sure.
So the question is then, what about your requisite? You're going to presume when that's accepted, when a woman accepts whatever the value is, that she's given, it's more whatever the halakhic value is, that if the person, the husband, does not have a requisite intent, but we're going to presume the intent from his words in the transaction that's taking place.
Yeah.
Right? So...
Yeah. What's your question?
Related back to what you said before about understanding, you know, about the representation.
A husband and wife, when a man and a woman get together, they have to know what they're doing.
Another, right? You said the presumption is something. You can always have a presumption that when somebody is mugadash, when it's set aside, like in the ancient temple, right?
Right.
When someone makes another, they have to have the proper intent. But you don't know they're going to have the proper intent. And a good example is if someone's getting married, is it a rebuttable presumption? Can someone invalidate? I'm just saying because for a lot of women that don't
so get you're talking to halakha, and I said earlier, I don't know how you would rule this halakha.
There's an interesting argument you make, right, saying if you can invalidate a husband's proper intent, does it effectuate the binding?
I don't know. We'll have to learn
and
more halakha.
And that would help a lot of ladies that are gunas.
I would, but we can't go down that road because we really don't know how to go.
Sorry, that's what I'm asking.
Okay. The other thing that we can say is that there's usually a certain amount of learning that potential chassanim and kalas take before they get married so that they do have some sense of what they're getting into.
But hopefully. I would say, can I add to what we were saying, sure, in the text about a child having empathy? I would say that what the child is feeling is not based off of necessarily experience. It's based off of just a chush that they have, like a innate talent. It's an innate talent that a person has to be empathic. But as a person matures, somebody who's not born with that, can develop the tools necessary to be more empathic based off of experience, which is what an adult would have at that point.
Khush is a good word associated with das.
It's a very good perception.
Think about that. Esther's saying you have
to have the innate capacity for the khush, or can you develop the capacity?
Both. You can have
it. So you can actually develop it.
Sure. But that's not what she's saying. She's saying that even a small child can have a khush for what's going on here, and an empathic, is that the word?
Empathetic, yeah.
Reaction. That is a quality of das.
But they would only be able to have that empathetic reaction based off of what they're seeing, not necessarily looking at the circumstances.
Yeah,
like a child could have, even like a dog could have empathy based off of the emotions that a person is exuding,
seeing pain,
which is different than being able to assess a situation
without
seeing the person's facial expressions and understanding what the person is actually going through based off of just seeing the circumstances.
Sometimes your dog will come up and let the tears in line on next to you because you can sense that you're upset. That's just saying the objective circumstances without the emotional can happen. Someone have a whoosh or to experience that.
But even the whoosh of empathy, there's some place in the developmental stage where that comes to the fore, and sometimes, and before that, it doesn't. It's a khush. If you have that, that's what he's talking about. You have to, the khush is the bill. I like that word. I mean, how do we translate it in English?
Khush is like intuition. A khush is a feeling.
A feeling.
Yeah.
A gravitational pull type of thing.
A khush is an intuitive feeling. All right. I'd say the translation
from overseas. Okay. So good. But this is giving us, hopefully, it is me as we're talking about this, a better sense of das, to bring us more down to earth. Das is the emergence of that khush, where you're not thinking about it only. You see it. Remember the first word, hakora. You recognize it, and it reverberates inside of you because you know you have a feel for what it is, and the ultimate expression of that is you have some heartfelt, empathetic.
Okay, but how do you know if you're having the right das at the right moment if it's just a khush? Meaning, you know how like even in the Torah it says that you could be, if you're kind to the cruel, you'll be cruel to the kind. So people have a khush for kindness, right? And empathy. Right. But if their empathy is misplaced,
right,
then that's not the right time to have that kind of das.
That's correct.
So that's right.
So then your pure emotion is overriding your mental
people are always like, be your true self, like a you be you kind of thing, that type of, feel whatever you want to feel, which I also think it can be very misplaced at times.
It can be very misplaced.
As to assume that we know the totality of circumstance, like only say, according to what Esther's saying, what you're saying is we apply by analogy our experiences. We have a whoosh, we have empathy because we've seen it in one situation. And we can apply it with a series of factors to another situation and apply by analogy from one situation to another. Right. But we don't always know the totality of circumstance. So isn't it better to err on the side of compassion, Rahmanas, than to err on the
It depends, side? Look at our culture today, erring on the side of Rahmanas.
Too much Rahmanas.
Right?
No,
just letting everybody free because she's right. The faculty of Das is a combo of good understanding, Havana, is mindfulness, and heart, right? That's das.
Of course.
Only the feeling, the hergish, the khush, the whatever you want to have, let's have mercy because look how painful that person is behind bars. Let's let him out.
No, I said jet some of the kavshut. That's all I'm saying. The first is a rebuttable presumption, but it's sometimes you don't know the totality of the circumstances and the information.
Well, you better before you let him out of prison.
No, I'm not talking about that. That's a pretty clear example.
Yeah, okay. So that's
that aren't clear.
So that would be
asking for food on the street.
I think if I may. I think that if we look at Shaul, so that's a case where you have what appears to be rachamim, but instead it was anivus in the wrong direction. He was listening to the people rather than listening to the Navi or HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we don't have nevuah today. But so what do we have? We certainly have the Torah, Kasav and Baal Peh. We also have the teachings from whether it's the Rebbe or other Das Tara of those who are living to help us. And it's important to have a mashpia so that you have a sounding board, some reflection in order to reflect back is this appropriately placed rachamim or is this inappropriately placed?
Right, and that comes with maturity and experience.
And we have to take it up with Hashem afterwards, because if we make a mistake and we judge the negative kav, we're going to bear that responsibility.
Okay, so I think we've got here a pretty good kind of down-to-earth way of looking at das. Das isn't simply the knee-jerk reaction of pity. Das is something informed by experience, something informed by mindfulness, informed by teaching, informed by understanding. But ultimately, it's an expression. It's a mature expression of the heart. Okay, we'll go from another just to another stopping place. Not bracketed, but we're going to have to bracket pretty soon. So, if a person doesn't have that, doesn't have some sense of empathy, it could lead to achzories, which is cruelty, the opposite of what we've talked.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Shehu mitzad heder har hergesh, which comes from a lack of empathy. This is, I don't know if that's what you were talking about. This is the opposite, where the person sees something going on and says,
look at that. Passivity, like a certain passiveness.
Or even worse, cruelty. Like,
would you say apathetic or literally?
No, this is cruelty. Like, I'll give an example of this, and then we see it in some way. This guy deserves to be poor because he hasn't done anything his whole life to pick himself up.
Very convenient when someone's sitting on his back or built their life on his suffering and then wants to justify.
That's exories, because as you haven't massive, you haven't recognized the whole holistic circumstances of this person.
What difference does it make? You're not going to be penalized by your chevre, but the people around you.
Please, right. Come on. So we got too much mercy that's not called for, right? You gave an example of that, and it's destructive also. Or the kindness, right? You have this simple example that's always given. You want to do something nice for a kid. Kid loves candy. You keep giving him candy? No. Because then the kid is going to learn, number one, that anytime he wants anything, he gets it. And that isn't the way life is.
Right. And nowadays, we use tablets as the analogy instead of candy. We use tablets as the analogy instead of candy.
Okay, that's the analogy these days. So that's the excessive or lack of das, right? That's on the one side. And the other side is just the negative side, where you don't have empathy. You see somebody who is in tatters and rags, and you feel, that's too bad for him. Maybe why didn't he go to college? Why didn't he learn something? So that's exorious. These are examples of immaturity, lack of das, right, where the emotion, in the either case, is running away with him. And if it's on the side of cruelty, either you don't have any mercy. So that you could be over merciful when it's not applied, not applicable, or under merciful. Mercy, true mercy, is you feel the lowness of the person, and you have compassion on the person. Moshe Kosev b'Machon Arach is written in another place, the rachamim hu min hadas. True mercy comes from das. And therefore, that's why, isn't this interesting? It's another middle kav, right? Mercy, teferes, another middle kav. It's, again, something that balances two sides, you know? The over-intellectual, you can lead to coldness. The over-heart leads to no bounds, you know? I have pity on everybody.
Is it possible to have empathy that's not an emotional empathy? Meaning, like, how do I explain it? Let's say you get into, let's say you hurt somebody, but what you did wasn't necessarily wrong, but they got hurt.
They got hurt
in the process, right? So you can have empathy for them while also understanding that you're not necessarily wrong, but you feel bad for them being hurt. You understand? Like, is there a possibility to have both? To become cool and collected while having empathy for the person and not and understanding their side, but also knowing, like, do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
Okay. Let's say you do something.
Yeah.
But what you did wasn't wrong. It wasn't a wrong thing to do.
What do you mean wasn't wrong? What does that mean?
It's very
try to justify.
Meaning, no, it's not trying to justify. It's just by the fact that you had to turn a corner, somebody got hurt, but you had to turn a corner, but like you were being careful. Somebody got hurt.
Okay, go ahead.
You didn't do something to hurt somebody, but they got hurt in the process.
Yeah.
can you understand, can you be empathetic towards them while being calm, cool, like you feel bad that they got hurt, but you also know that it's not like you did it on, you didn't right. do it to hurt them.
Right.
I'm not saying that they were, you know, I don't mean you hit them. I'm just saying like your mere existence, let's say your mere existence.
We have whole halachos that discuss this. The whole reason for the cities of refuge is that if you have someone, you didn't mean for the blade of your axe to fly off and go into the other person. So it wasn't intentional, but the other person got hurt. And now this may be an extreme where the person then runs to a city of refuge, but we learn from that, that yes, there are plenty of times where you have the one person who didn't mean to perpetrate whatever it was, the other person got hurt or worse. And yet we also learn that the person had to be even more careful than they were. So on the one hand, there are strict, you know, halachas and how we handle it. But on the other, it doesn't negate saying, well, wait, what did I need to do to prevent it even more?
Hold on, Elizabeth. No, we're not going to have a wild sweat, Jonathan. Everybody.
Okay.
Elizabeth, Esther wants to clarify.
It's not a negligent thing. The turning the corner was like, on the cuff.
Right, that's
I'm talking about, let's say, you just exist. Your existence
bothers
someone is bothersome to somebody. Let's
you're
put it.
Some game.
I'm gonna put it simply.
My existence, okay? Each of my stepfather, my little sister, because I was
I'm just saying, like
your existence bothers somebody.
Now you know in your heart that this person has been through a lot, and right. they, you know, they've been hurt very badly, and you feel empathy for them, but you also know that there's nothing you could do. You can't just erase yourself or make yourself smaller to make that other person comfortable with that. So you can have empathy for them, but also be calm, cool, and collected. It's not an emotional empathy where it's like, you know, I feel bad for doing what I did to you because you can't possibly feel bad for it because you exist. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. So it bothers them that they're bothered. It's bothersome to you that they're bothered by you.
No, it's not bothersome. Like you feel bad for them that they have this pain or whatever it is, but there's nothing you can do about it. Okay. So
badly because of their lack of development.
Yes, yes, exactly. Their lack of development and their lack of an ability to make
space
for others.
That's quite judgmental.
No, well, I'm not talking about anyone in particular.
If they were more developed, they would be able to tolerate me, right?
That is the case, because if someone is more developed, if they develop those qualities in themselves, then they're not bothered by other people, because then they know that only a Kodesh Baruch Hu can help, only a Kodesh Baruch Hu can harm, and the other person's existence is not a harm to them.
Okay, but Aliza, so I just want to go back to my question, my original question off of this is it possible to have empathy while it's not an emotional empathy, because it's not like you have to do teshuva for something or feel bad or whatever. You can understand their point of view, but also it's not an empathy of like a crying or like an emotion. Right. It's you can be there for them, but also be detached.
Yeah. You
know what I'm saying? Because is that a possibility? Is there a possibility to have those two
things coexisting? Haven't you experienced that in life?
Oh, we're not getting personal.
I think so.
Yeah, I think there's categories, like there's cognitive empathy and emotional empathy.
Yep.
So yours is more the cognitive.
You like those expressions. Cognitive empathy is the first part, where the heart is raised up into the brain. And then there's, what was the second? Cognitive empathy and?
Emotional empathy.
Compassionate.
And compassionate empathy, where the heart is more predominant. That's nice.
What Esther was positing was a scenario where there's no fault of her own, but her very existence and her inability to choose an alternative course caused someone else damages. So the question, and she didn't know it, it's not a question of being on the course of behavior, and she knows she's about to run into someone, but it's either herself or the other person. She turned the corner, she couldn't have avoided it, and she didn't know it, but it still caused the other person suffering or damage. So he's saying, to no cause of her own, and she had no knowledge or forethought of that capacity, can she still experience empathy for the person, although she physically may have caused the person to suffer?
To Esther answered.
Well, yeah, of course. Yes. But also knowing, like, oh, there was nothing I could do. Like, you know, I was saying, even on a very less extent of, like, let's say, take the inertia out of it, like, just existing can also cause other people pain. sometimes. I'm not talking about me. I'm saying
that. I know you're not talking.
You know what I'm saying?
Face like, talking about me.
Have you seen that? Remember the movie Face Off? No, sorry.
Good, it's good.
The concept Face Off.
Guys, we're going to wrap with this. We're going to wrap with this. We're way over time. But this is totally important because how else do we understand
it? Right.
You know?
Right.
Okay, so we'll get back into the... Now, as a class, we're going to have to make the decision here. There's a lot more to this, and I'm happy because I'm very not only happy about the discussion, I'm happy about what we're learning, and I'm happy about maybe this will come out of here with a better understanding of davening and what it means to daven and what we can do in daven. But I'm hoping that you guys, and if you're not, you'll have to tell me, have the patience to continue with the Rebbe Rashab, because that's my plan, and let me know if I think it's so far so good.
Okay.
There's a lot more to go. We're only in Ois Hay, and there are 13 Ois years. Okay? So we're going to sign off, guys. Thank you. It was a beautiful, beautiful conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. Thank you.